CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, what's up? This is Jason Bittner from Flotsam and Jetsam and Shadows Fall, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast. Thanks for joining us here today on the show. We have two special guests, the first being Victor Ruiz, my co-host, special guest co-host today. Victor, how are you?
Good, how are you, Mark?
Good. The second being the current drummer of Flotsam and Jetsam and also Shadows Fall, Jason Bittner. He's on the show here. We're going to hear from him a little bit later. Victor, were you a big Flotsam and Jetsam fan back in the day?
I caught on to them probably around the Quattro album, which was early 90s. That
right.
Had, you know, some sort of success. At the time, I was in college radio, so that album, MCA, I remember, pushed the hell out of the album. So it got a lot of airplay, and I believe Dave Ellefson also contributed to that album as well. So it was one of the first times that he had written anything outside of Megadeth.
Cool.
So, yeah, I'm aware of them since then.
Yeah, I was never like a hardcore fan of the band, but right. I will say that I always totally respected them. I saw them for the first time live. Actually, the only time I've ever seen them live was in 19... It had to be, I want to say, 89-ish, maybe 88, I'm not sure, at the Empire Rock Club in Philadelphia, where I saw, I think, only two shows at that club, but both of them just off the hook, a crazy great hard rock metal club. I saw Heaven's Edge there, which was more of a Bon Jovi-esque type of band, and then I also saw Flotsam and Jetsam when they came through town, and remember the place just going nuts for them, and always respected them, of course. Something that's really tied in with their history is the connection with Metallica, because, of course, Jason Newsted got his start there in this band, Flotsam and Jetsam, before leaving the band to go on to join Metallica. And, of course, our guest today, Jason Bittner, the drummer, he only just joined recently, like maybe 2 years ago or so. So, having said that, let's get into some old Flotsam and Jetsam here on Talking Metal. This is going way, way back. Again, this features Jason Newsted on the bass on this one. Hammerhead from 1986 by Flotsam and Jetsam. a little old school Flotsam and Jetsam here on the podcast today. That was Hammerhead going way back to 1986. And Victor, real quick, before we get into some listener feedback here from the Talking Metal hotline and some emails that came in, give us a little update what you're up to podcasting wise, your shows and maybe who's coming up as special guests, what you're talking about.
Sure. I just released an episode on Mars Attacks with Carly Coma from the band Candiria. Have a bunch of other interviews lined up. Have Kyle from The Sword, which should be out this coming week. Just spoke to Herman Frank and Graham Bonnet also. I know both of them have been making the rounds, but that Graham Bonnet album that he just released, really, really great, strong album. Was pleasantly surprised with that.
Right.
So the interview is somewhat revealing in the fact that how his contract is structured with Frontiers and why the album is a double album, because it is new tracks and it is old tracks, which Graham sort of explains he sort of did because the label wanted him to, not because he actually wanted to. So
cool. Well, we look forward to checking out that interview on Mars Attacks. And what about your other show, Galaxy of Geeks? What's coming up on that?
Galaxy of Geeks. Yeah, we're definitely ramping up for the Star Wars season. Rogue One is less than a month away. There's plenty of other things that we're actually recording an episode tomorrow, and we're going to talk about everything from Walking Dead to actually Star Wars Rebels and the implication with Rogue One. We're also going to be talking about the various Marvel and DC shows that are currently running as well. So
very cool. What's your favorite Marvel or DC, not movie, like TV show? What are the, if I was going to pick one of them, you know, I watched a little bit of, what is it, the Supergirl one. I thought it was all right, but it wasn't something that was totally like captivating me. What are some of your favorites?
Supergirl is something that I'm not a huge fan of either, so I can definitely.
Yeah, I didn't dislike it, but it was just like, it was kind of like, yeah, it was all right, you know.
If I want to go with the DC stuff, which is on CW, in my opinion, The Flash is their best series.
Right.
And you also have to take into consideration that it's based off of a certain time period with Flash comics, which is the Silver Age, which is around the 50s. So it's very friendly. It's PC. It's very much for that CW crowd. If you want to go with some adult content, you can't go wrong with any of the Netflix Marvel series. They've really upped their game to a point where those Netflix series are probably better than any of the movies that they're releasing from Marvel or DC, because it is geared towards adults, at least for my liking. So there's a ridiculous amount of gore. Well, not so much gore, but you have like Game of Thrones level, like action and people being killed and fight scenes and profanity and even sex and different things that really are in the comics but are scraped away to make it, you know, PG or, you know, friendly for TV. But if you really want to examine those old Daredevil comics or the old, you know, Luke Cage comics, they've all got some gritty things going on. So
right.
Netflix and Marvel have really teamed up to do something that really reflects that. And obviously it's not perfect because, you know, there are people, you know, that are gung-ho and over-the-top hardcore that will pick out every little thing. But the shows, in my opinion, are entertaining. And in the end, they're all 1 hour episodes, more or less. Okay. And it's almost as if you're watching, you know, a 13 hour movie per se, because it is done in a fashion similar to what HBO has done with Game of Thrones and all of their series. It's short, it's compact, and for the most part, it's straight and to the point, where it isn't, you know, a gluttonous 24 episode series that you need
filler just to, you know, sell ads and everything else. So I think that, you know, definitely Netflix and HBO have really catapulted themselves above everyone else with knowing how to cut away all the fat and really, you know, give you exactly what you're looking for. So
right on. And, you know, you mentioned Rogue One coming up, which I'm sure you guys are going to be discussing on the Galaxy of Geeks podcast, which you just said you're going to be discussing. But I'm speaking of Netflix, I'm totally into this Bloodline TV show now with Ben Mendelsohn, who will be one of the main stars in Rogue One. And what and a phenomenal, phenomenal actor this guy is. Bloodline, I highly recommend this. It's a Netflix series. Very, very intense, very great stuff. Not science fiction. It's about a family, siblings in their like 40s and their family dynamic of running a resort down in the Key West area and living in that area. So it's just excellent, excellent acting on this show, especially by Ben Mendelsohn, who is one of the leads, I guess, I think he's a lead, right? At least on the bad guy side, right, Victor?
Yes, I believe you're correct.
Yeah, in Rogue One. So good stuff. So having said that, check out Victor's stuff. We link his shows when he posts a new podcast through the Talking Metal Facebook page. It's Talking Metal Digital. So if you go to facebook.com/talkingmetaldigital, you get all the new shows from Victor, from Talking Metal, from Mitch LaFond. It's all right there on that one page. And you can check out both of the shows, Mars Attacks and Galaxy of Geeks, the two shows that Victor mentioned previously here. So having said that, let's get into some calls from the Talking Metal listeners. And I'm going to let these play in full and try not to talk over you guys as you're delivering your voicemail. And Victor and I will respond after the voicemail is complete. First one is from Jerry.
Mark, this is Jerry. The Ghost Show was amazing. King's Theater was awesome.
Yeah, it was totally amazing.
Even better than Radio City Music Hall. The music podcasts are awesome. I never would have gotten
thanks,
to
thanks.
Now listening to He Is, which you played on your podcast. I'm a fairly new listener, probably since 2015. Love the
excellent
music podcast. I don't know how any of these people are saying they don't like hearing new music. My age is 51. I'm into Maiden, Priest. I know all the old stuff. It's the new stuff that I can't keep up with. It's coming fast and furious. So when you play it on your podcast, I give it a check. If I like it, I download it, burn it, and put it on the phone. So I've gotten 111 plays on my phone already from listening to He Is.
Wow.
So keep up the good work. Cool. And keep playing music. And fuck Eddie Trunk.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. And wow. The theater, Victor, where Jerry saw the Ghost performance last weekend. I was there. John Astronomy was there. Ray Chin, my friend who I work with, was there. A lot of people at this show, sold out show. This theater, Victor, was just absolutely incredible. I don't know if you saw, I posted some pictures of the interior of it on my Facebook page. But have you ever heard of the King's Theater?
Actually, seeing your pictures was the first time. Actually, seeing your pictures and actually my co-host for Galaxy of Geeks.
Oh, right.
Chris Vaglio was there as well.
Cool.
It looks like an amazing theater. And again, I've never heard of it before. And it's cool that there's another really neat looking venue in the New York area to put on shows like this.
Yeah, I know Whitesnake played there, which I did not see, but the Ghost Show that I was at last weekend, just excellent show. And whenever you're at this theater is so massive too, bigger than, like, if you remember Roseland in the City or Hammerstein, definitely much bigger than those places. At least to me it felt that way. I don't know what the capacity seating is in either one of those places, but it felt larger. The room itself was larger. Whether it held more people than like a Roseland where everyone's crammed together without seats, I don't know. I'd have to look that up. But great, great place to see the show. And Jerry, thank you for your call. You know, Eddie Trunk, you know, I worked for Eddie Trunk on season 15 of the of That Metal Show, or I didn't really work for him because, believe it or not, he was more the host of the show. I worked for VH1. I worked with him, I guess I should say. Right. And, you know, I've always enjoyed Eddie's show on his Q104 here in the city. It was definitely an influence way back in 2005 when we started putting this show together. I always say that the two people who really I took the idea for Talking Metal from was Michael Butler's Rock and Roll Geek Show was a big influence on me, and also Eddie Trunk's FM radio show, where these guys would just get on there and talk about music. And Eddie a little more serious tone, Michael a little more silly, fun tone at times. And I really always have a lot of respect for Eddie Trunk. However, I do know that sometimes his opinions do get to people. He's made it clear he doesn't like Ghost. And there is sometimes a lot of backlash against Eddie Trunk. What do you think, Victor?
Similar to you. I mean, when I started doing the podcast, outside of you giving me the, you know, proverbial push in the direction of doing one, Eddie Trunk was definitely the other guy that, you know, that really influenced me with not only doing a show, but being such a music nerd. I mean,
isn't he from your area? I mean, I know he went to high school in Madison, but didn't he live out in the Dover area? Victor, guys, he's in Spain now, but he's originally from Jersey. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he went to high school in Morristown, but he lives in Madison.
Well, he used to live in Madison, yeah.
Oh, okay.
He lives, he lives out in Dover now, I think. Morris Plains, maybe. Morris Plains, actually. That's where he lives.
I mean, they're fairly close to one another. Yeah. The station that he first worked at, which was WDHA, was about a mile from my house. It was always announced as being a Dover station because they were originally located in Dover. And technically when he worked there, they were in Randolph, New Jersey. So, I mean, I was a kid that would listen, you know, Friday nights, Metal Mania with Cheryl Richards. They had Eddie Trunk doing the metal news at 12 at night. And, I mean, he went through a lot of crap with her because she would make fun of him every chance she could. She would call him Donut Boy and things like that, and it was almost unfair. And at the time, though, he was the only sort of outlet that I knew of that would tell you, you know, what Kiss was up to, what, you know, when Vinnie Vincent Invasion fell apart, he was the one that told everyone about that. When, I mean, he would have, you know, even special shows where before he was the full-time host, he would have Anthrax on or Overkill or, you know, a lot of these bands that he worked with at Megaforce. And it was cool because you could tell that he had sort of a good friendly relationship with these guys. And, you know, it was more than just your standard, you know, how's the record coming along? How's the tour coming along type of thing? So,
right.
So, I mean,
he brought a passion to it.
Yeah,
and he still does
absolutely.
To this day for the bands that he likes, for sure.
Yeah, my only gripe that I will say with him, or my biggest one, is that his personality has almost eclipsed who he is, per se. I think I've met him before, I've talked to him before, and he seems like a nice guy. But he also seems to want to take credit for a lot of different things that whether he's actually been the catalyst for or not, there are just a lot of things that maybe he wants to think that he spearheaded that he actually didn't. But right. There's one thing that I posted about a year ago on my other site, Earpeeler, where he's asked flat out, you know, about new bands and whatnot. And he says, well, you know, there won't be any new bands in like 10 years time and this and that. And radio stations really have to get behind them. And basically the person interviewing him asks, well, what new bands are you into? And he says to the interviewer, all nonchalant, he says, well, not for nothing, but I put this band together called the Winery Dogs. And my first thing that went through my mind was, you know, technically, yes, they're a new band, but Mike Portnoy, Billy Sheehan, and Richie Kotzen have such a massive fan base. They're far from a, you know, unknown band that needs press per se. So I don't know. It just it was almost like he was actually playing up what he was saying that he was sort of against. So, but whatever, that's his prerogative. He's that metal show going off air, I will say, and I know a lot of people take that same attitude as Jerry. That metal show going off the air is a massive hit for hard rock and metal. Whether you like Eddie or not, whether you like Don Jameson or Jim Florentine or not, as you've mentioned this before, you know, VH1 really guided that ship and really made them have the host that – or I'm sorry, the guest that they had on the show. But how many other outlets are there at that level at this point in time that call any attention to hard rock and metal? There aren't. And that's why a lot of people should really have taken that into account when that show was on. And instead of seeing it as, you know, oh, fuck those guys, you know, we want to see – and sure, I want to see Talking Metal – on Fuse as well, or I would prefer to see you guys on there. But the fact of the matter is they were the only ones at that point in time. So it sucks that, you know, the metal sort of community were divided in the, yes, let's get behind them, no, fuck those guys type of a deal.
Yeah. You know? And listen, the fans that those three guys have just on their own are pretty hardcore. And I've witnessed that firsthand. The you know, I'm friends with Jeff, who is the producer of that metal show. He's the one who hired me to work on the last season of it. Did I say season 15? I think I meant season 14 earlier, but the final season I worked on of that metal show, he even let me host some of the web-based stuff and let me produce whatever I wanted with that. It was a great, great job to have. I'm currently working on reality shows and it's a fucking nightmare. But having said that, Jeff Bumgardner is the producer, and he somehow has gotten the name That Metal Show. He owns that name. He is shopping it. He's been shopping it for over a year to other stations, and there I can report, this is no secret, there are no takers as of yet. He continues to try to get it going. I have ideas on how it should be shopped. I think he needs to bring investors in. I think he needs to set it up as a on-demand type service that you could get like through an Amazon Prime or Roku or something like that. But he still believes that there is a home for this and it can be resurrected on a station just like it used to be on VH1 Classic. We'll see if that works out. I think the technology is changing. The way people consume content is changing.
Yeah.
And it's a hard, hard sell. And I'll tell you this, you know, not always to bring it back to Talking Metal on Fuse, which was at this point, what, 8-9 years ago. But we were the second highest rated show on that channel when those episodes came out. They continued to rerun the show for over 2 years, and we always did well in the ratings for them. But when you're getting 50,000 to 100,000 viewers per episode, which is not much, it's a very hard sell to take that somewhere else. Fuse was a station that just lost money. Guess what? VH1 Classic was a tax write-off. VH1 Classic didn't make any money. So when you hear that, oh, well, it was the top-rated show on VH1 Classic. It was the only show on VH1 Classic, really. And, you know, what? They'd have occasionally Metal Evolution or some hip-hop show or something. But it was really the flagship show of that station. And it's still, you know, I saw the ratings each week. I mean, we weren't talking about millions of people watching this show. We were talking about a devoted fan base between, you know, 50 to 80,000 each week watching those new episodes. And that's just, you know, I get 5,000 listeners on this podcast. You know, that's like, that's not, you know, and I'm not spending $100,000 per episode, you know. I mean, so it's a tough sell. And I only hope that it ends up back on some sort of platform, because whether you like it or not, I do think it was, like you said, Victor, a really great outlet and something that a certain portion of the hard rock community really embraced and loved. And I think the more metal on TV, the more hard rock on TV, the more music at this point, just the more music on TV, the better. So I hope for the best. And if I hear anything, I will definitely let you know. I'd love to work on that show again. In some ways, I enjoyed working on that metal show way more than I enjoyed hosting and working on my own show on Fuse, because it was just the crew and the people who work on that show were just such professionals, and just ran so much smoother than what we did on Fuse, which just seemed like there was just constant conflict and infighting at the Fuse station wasn't as united as the folks that worked on that metal show were. And they didn't, you know, all those people truly, even if they don't like hard rock or heavy metal, I mean, Jeff Baumgartner isn't even a big metal guy, but he believes in what they're doing so much. And it was a great bunch of people to be involved with for, you know, the 4 months that I worked with them, 4.5 months, whatever it was. Cool. Let's get on to the next call. And this one is JB Allen.
Hey, Mark, this is JB Allen. Here we go. I just wanted to give you a shout out.
Hey.
Thank you so much for doing so much for metal and giving guys like me something to be stoked about. I just want to give a request for something off a New Testament album, Brotherhood of the Snake, which I think is phenomenal.
Yes.
Maybe
I do too.
Pale King, which I think is a really strong track. But I hope you guys are doing well. And thanks so much for all that you do. Take care.
Right on. Thank you, JB, for the message there. And right now, let's get into some New Testament. This is The Pale King.
the movies are written herein. Let others I must take with me. The spirit of David, no longer known. On you have mercy on my soul.
New Testament, The Pale King. Have you heard much of the New Testament, Victor?
Yes.
Good, right?
Yeah, it's
Alex
really
Skolnick's
good.
Alex Skolnick's guitar playing just is insane. He's so great.
Yeah, and this album, really, I mean, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. You had Formation of Damnation, which was such a good, strong album. It was such a great comeback, and so many bands flounder after their comeback. They came out with follow-up to Formation of Damnation, was equally as strong in my opinion. And this album, Brotherhood of the Snake, is just ridiculous. You know, as you're saying, Skolnick is over the top with his playing. Chuck Billy has almost like taken his vocals into another gear. Everything he's done on the last two albums, he's taken that. Plus, he's added like an even more melodic aspect to it. It's just a crazy album. I was listening to it again today, thanks to JB, and I was easily thinking this. You know, if I do a year end list, this is easily, in my opinion, top 10. It could possibly be top right. 5. I mean, it's that strong.
Right on. JB, thanks for your voicemail. Thanks for requesting that song. The New Testament definitely is rocking. Guys, leave us a voicemail, 973-757-1917. I'm going to jump over to an email right now. This is from Martin, who touches base with me frequently. It's always great to hear from you, Martin. First of all, happy birthday. Thanks, Martin. Hope it's a good one. It is. Actually, today is my actual birthday that we're recording this. I'm going to see Enough's Enough tonight. One remaining member, Chip's Enough, but I'm cool with that. Looking forward to it. All right. So let's see. Martin, I'm not going to read your whole thing. You mentioned the election. Yeah, we're kind of over and done with that for now. Plus, people get pissed off when I talk politics, so I try to avoid that. Have to admit, you were interested in the Crowley stuff I mentioned. Yeah, Crowley, fascinating story. Jack Parsons, even more fascinating story, and they tie together. If you don't know Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons and how it ties in with even Scientology, I highly recommend researching that. And Martin then says, I've been listening to Talking Metal for, I think, 4+ years now, and I've always enjoyed the shows as the hosting duties have evolved. I've missed John at the start, but you've made the show your own, so I don't think anyone can argue with that. Having said that, it's really nice to hear John making odd guest appearances now and then, and I'm pleased you guys are still friends. I enjoy Metal Raps too. He goes on to say some other stuff. Let's see. Sadly, I don't buy much music. Said that they prefer the non-music. Pointless, but there you go. Yeah, I've been asking people if they prefer the music versions versus the non-music versions of the show. Martin seems to like the music version of the show. Martin, you've always been a great supporter. Thanks so much for checking in with us. And let's get into another call right now.
Yo, Mark,
here we go.
How's it going? This is Joey.
Good, how are you? Joey.
Been listening about 3 or 4 years now. Man, I love what you're doing with Talking Metal. I love the variety. I like that sometimes you've got interviews, sometimes you just play music, and I like getting turned on to new metal. I like you've got your wife on. That's cool. So, yeah, I like the variety. And, my favorite band is Type O Negative, and it'd be awesome if you could score an interview with one of the guys. one of the remaining members. I know Pete's gone, but yeah, and a request. How about some Typo Negative and something off Welcoming Down?
Yeah.
Right on. Thanks a lot.
You got it. You got it, Joey. Thank you for checking in. This is Everyone I Love Is Dead, Typo, going back to 1999 here on Talking Metal.
Seems 3 years, or maybe four. Someone drops dead on my door. You love someone, there will be grief. A kiss of death, lips of a thief.
a little typo negative requested by Joey from Scottsdale, Arizona. Joey, thank you for checking in. And, you know, Victor, it's interesting, you know, I'm hearing from people who have been listeners of this show, you know, for three to four years, which to me, it's like I always have this idea that Talking Metal, everyone thinks of it as the Mark and John show, and I'm always trying to justify it that John isn't really involved like he used to be. I mean, hell, 13 months went by where he wasn't on the show at all. So for me, it's like I forget that there's all these. I almost feel like we have more new listeners now that don't even really know the old era that you knew. And, you know, some remember the Talking Metal forums, which I think is where I met you, Victor, right? On the forums. I don't know. Yep. It's just like, I feel like those days are so far gone that I guess I always want to bring John back on to kind of nod to the old days. And, you know, and listen, the bottom line is John isn't calling me saying, let's do another podcast. It's always me reaching out to him. Hey, you want to get together and do a podcast, you know, but I don't know. Another part of me is just like, people don't long to have John on the show. I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? And I mean, speak freely. John doesn't listen to this show, so, you know.
I will say that I enjoy when John is on the show.
Well, you're an old school listener. Like, when did you start listening to the podcast? It had to be like 8 years ago at least, right? Was it because of the Fuse show?
No, because I was here in Spain already, so I didn't know of the Fuse show until I met you in person and you gave me a DVD of the interview that you guys did with Slash. Or I probably knew of the show via the forums, basically, but I didn't have access to watching it. I jumped on board, I'm assuming, like a year and a half, 2 years into when Talking Metal first came on, around, 06, 07, somewhere in that neighborhood. Okay. Talking Metal is one of the only shows that I still frequently download. I still have a shitload of episodes to listen to, but I still listen to, you know, on a fairly frequent basis. I will say this, and I mentioned this to you in an email, that hearing Emily do the interview with Jeff Tate was really cool because obviously Emily knows her shit. She's well-spoken as well. And I think a lot of these people, a lot of, you know, people that we tend to interview, it's like, another guy we're speaking to. So when they actually get to speak to a female, and on top of that, someone who's very competent and knows their, you know, their music vernacular and their history and everything else, I think it helps them open up a lot more. With everything that they've said about Tate over the years, I mean, that to me was just like a regular conversation where, again, it wasn't your paint-by-numbers thing, and it was like, wow, that was so cool to listen to her, you know, get him to open up. So as much as, you know, people, old-school people may miss John or whatever, and you know, I've always had
but
more
I don't
of a
know
connection
if they do
you.
Anymore. You know, it's like, yeah, it's like, I don't know if they do anymore. That's the thing. It's like, I feel like I have this idea that people want to hear John back and that he was an enormous part of the show for the first 5 years. We've been on for 11 years now. It was a gradual decline in his participation on the show and behind the scenes. I mean, he hasn't done a Talking Metal interview in like 3 years, probably maybe four, you know, since we did the Talking Metal live show, you know? So it's like, you know, I still have fun doing this. I'm not trying to make money doing it. I love donations. I love that people use the Amazon links, but it's like, this is just a fun hobby at this point for me. And I enjoy it so much more now that it's become that, honestly. So
very cool. Yeah. And like I said, I've always had the one-on-one connection with you. I mean, again, you were the one that sort of gave me the shove in the door to do the podcasting, and I've always been in contact with you on a fairly frequent basis. And I mean, honestly, we did the last batch of live shows going back, 2 years, probably right. a little bit more than that. And I mean, John jumped on towards the end of that. So there was even like a 1 year, one in change, almost 2 year period where we were doing shows a lot where he wasn't even involved. He was involved towards the end. And when, you know, I think the last show we ever did with him was when we actually had Mitch LaFon on and it was the four of us. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying is extremely fair as well, that you've been the catalyst behind everything. And I mean, he's helped out tremendously in the past. He helped with, you know, a lot of hooking you up with interviews and different things, but things have evolved like everything else in life. And I mean, I think if people just get to hear you on the show, get to hear your wife on the show and a revolving door with other people, you know, I don't think anyone can be really upset about that.
Right on. Right on. All right. Well, we're really getting into overtime here, and we still have not heard from Jason, our interview with Jason. So right now, let's listen to one more call. This comes from David, whose son is named Harrison, just like my son. And David has been a longtime listener. I love this guy. I believe he's in New York. And I believe we've met him a couple times, I think.
This is David Isaac.
Hey, David.
I just paused the podcast and picked up my cell phone and called, just like you said to. A couple thoughts. I guess you were talking about people that have been with the show for a while. Can't say I've been there since the beginning, but probably pretty close. The thing I think I miss the most about John not being around is just his kookiness. I love those stories where he would just, he would start talking about something, and I was like, where the hell is this guy going with this? I still remember the one about
the giant rat on his foot
in New York City. I still think about that. It was just a hysterical story. I think my favorite episodes at this point, you know, guest aside, because I mean, sometimes if there's a great guest, I don't even care who's interviewing them. But I really like the shows that you do with Victor. Victor, I think he brings something really
good.
He's
here
to
today,
it,
Victor,
as a fan of music and as a good interviewer. And
I agree, definitely.
I'd say the same for the stuff that you're doing with Emily now. I mean, I've only heard a few podcasts with her doing the interviews, but I really do like the interviews that she does. Definitely a different dimension than there was with John. And I think really good just in terms of pure interview and getting the artists to talk about good stuff about themselves. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Definitely.
I mean, honestly, though, I'll listen to whatever you put up there. I've enjoyed you. I've enjoyed the show over the years, and
kind of
like, you know, almost feeling like I'm your friend at this point after this many years. You know.
Absolutely.
A couple other quick thoughts. Not show related, but just a couple new things that I'm listening to. I absolutely love the new Glenn Hughes record.
Me too, heavy, man.
And so hard, and what an amazing talent as a songwriter and as a performer. I'm enjoying the heck out of that record, and also just picked up the new Graham Bonnet CD, the book.
Yep, Victor just mentioned
like
that.
The new stuff that he's doing, and also I'm really, really enjoying the re-recorded versions of the stuff with the new band. Hard to decide which disc to listen to, you know, stuff that you've heard so many times. And just a fresh take on them versus, you know, brand new music that's in that same vein. Really good stuff. Anyway, keep up the good work. Continue after all these years to still really love the show and love what you're doing. And hopefully see you out there again sometime soon. Take care. Be well.
Thanks, David. And right now let's get into a little new Glenn Hughes. This is My Town off the Resonate album, which is just a really good album.
Alligator, breathe deep and let it go. Let it love, this is my time, there is no division. This is my time, this is my love, this is my soul.
This is my time. This is my love, Lord, can't you see? This is my time. This is my soul, Lord, inside of me. I take the pressure now, it's in my blood. Navigator, alligator, let me see.
This is my time.
This is my town, this is my love, this is my soul, it is my decision. This is my town, this is my love, this is my town.
This is my town.
Little Glenn Hughes, My Town, Resonate, really digging this record. David Isaac mentioned the Graham Bonnet record, which you said is really great, Victor, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Cool. And you got an interview coming up with Graham. That hasn't been posted yet, right?
No, it has not.
Cool. Well, we'll look for that soon on Mars Attacks, which is one of Victor's podcasts. And without further ado, let's finally get into my interview with Jason, the drummer from Flotsam and Jetsam and Shadows Fall, here on Talking Metal. This song is called Taser. We're going to play a little bit of this song, a sound sample, if you will, and then we'll get right into my interview with Jason. Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and on the line, Jason Bittner from
a lot of different stuff, including Flotsam and Jetsam. Great new record, Jason. So glad to be talking with you tonight.
Thank you.
And obviously, this is a legendary band that has just an incredible history. Let's talk about how you came into the fold with them. I guess you've been with them since about 2014. How did you get involved with Flotsam and Jetsam?
I got a call from my very good old friend, Kelly Smith, who was Flotsam's original drummer. And he called me up and he said basically he was having some family issues. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in his world that was detracting from his ability to commit to the band fully, which is understandable. You know, family always comes first. And he asked if I would be interested in taking over the chair. And, you know, he knew I was a fan for years, and I said, absolutely. And at that time, it just turned out that Shadows Fall was pretty much going on hiatus because John joined Anthrax.
Right.
So, you know, that pretty much put us in a state of flux. So right as, you know, my band was kind of closing down and I was wondering what I was going to do next, you know, Kelly called with this opportunity. So I said, absolutely. And, you know, a month later I was out in Phoenix jamming songs with the guys. And, you know, the next few months later we were writing and recording a record. So here we are pretty much 2 years later.
And what a record it is. It's just great stuff on it. Some of my favorite tracks, the opening
Thank
cut, Seventh Seal, great. I really love the song Creeper. That's just a great, great groove on that one. Iron Maiden, kind of a great song, kind of an interesting song. Let me ask you about that song. Is that, I mean, it sounds like Maiden, you know, is that a tribute to them? What's the story behind the song Iron Maiden?
No, you know, anytime that you have dual guitar harmonies, it's going to sound like Boston or Iron Maiden. That's right. That's pretty much what's going to happen. And when we started, when the music for that song definitely has a Maiden feel. And every time AK started writing lyrics for it, everything he'd come up with, he just said it sounded like Bruce Dickinson. So finally he was like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to embrace my inner Bruce Dickinson.
Yeah.
And, you know, it turned out to be, you know, and the song is not a cover of the song Iron Maiden. It's about right. The torture device of the Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
But it still is a tribute. It's still a tribute to the band because, you know, they're our favorite metal band of all time. And, you know, let's put it this way. They're amazing and we love them. So, you know, it's a little bit of a tip of the hat to them as well.
When you guys started working on this record, how conscious were you as a newer member of the band, like about the history that this band has and how did that influence the writing of these songs?
I mean, I've followed the band since I was a kid. You know, I saw them for the first time in 1988 when I was 18 years old. That's how long I've known a few of the guys in the band. I've known Mike and Kelly that long. You know, I was always a fan. I grew up playing these songs and coming into being the drummer in the band, I wanted to maintain, you know, Kelly's spirit on the old songs. But, you know, slowly but surely, I've been interjecting my own little things here and there. But it pretty much stays true to form to the way the songs are played initially. But when it came to writing my own drum parts, the guys wanted me to be me. And that's the thing I wanted to do too. I wanted to, you know, put my own stamp on these songs and not make it sound like another drummer. So, you know, that's why there's more double bass on the record. There's a lot of the two-handed rotting stuff that I'm known for. You know, a lot of my little signature licks here and there are, you know, peppered throughout that record. So, but it was still not, I didn't really, you know, write the drum parts in any way to make it like a drum album per se. It's just, you know, I wanted to do the best parts I could come up with, but meanwhile, still maintaining the integrity of the song.
Right on. And producer-wise, who did you work with on the album?
Chris Collier ended up producing it for us. Did a great job.
Yeah, definitely. And again, guys, this is the self-titled Flotsam and Jetsam record. It is out now. Yep. It's on Spotify. It's on iTunes. The CD is out. Why did you guys go with a self-titled?
It's primarily on AFM Records, too.
Okay, cool.
Let's not leave the record label out. AFM
right
Records.
On. Right on. Right on. Any reason that you went with a self-titled, you know, title for this?
Yeah, because after so many years and the band being, you know, 30 years old, you know, there's new members and new life. So we kind of just wanted to sort of, you know, not really start over again, but it's a rebirth. So we said, let's just do a self-titled this time.
Cool. And besides yourself and Eric and Michael, can you run down the current lineup?
What's that?
Besides yourself and Eric and Michael, can you run down who else is in the band?
It's AK, myself, Michael Gilbert, Michael Spencer, and Steve Conley on guitar.
Nice, cool. And let's change gears just a little bit. You mentioned Shadows Fall. It's still the hiatus is happening. John is off with Anthrax. I mean, is there any updates on the future of Shadows Fall?
We don't really know yet. You know, we'll see what happens. Yeah, it's okay. One of those things where, you know, with John being busy with Anthrax and John being busy with Anthrax, and me with Flotsam and Matt doing Act Defiance, we don't know what's going to happen with that. You know, we're if there's a time and place for it and we all have time, we definitely want to do it. But we're just not sure yet.
Right on. Now, you've done some work with Anthrax in the past, too. Was that connection through John? How did that all come about?
No, John had nothing to do with that. I'm the one that got John at Anthrax.
Oh, wow. Right? Okay. Okay.
I've been filling in for Charlie since 2006, and that's just because I'm, you know, Charlie's one of my dear friends.
Right.
And I did a bunch of touring with them in 2012, and during that time, Rob Caggiano kept saying he was going to leave, and he kept asking me if John would be able to do the gig, and I said, of course he would. And next thing you know, he left, and John's in the band now.
Right on. Cool. And let's talk about your equipment. What type of drums, cymbals, hardware are you using?
Pearl drums, Zildjian cymbals. I've been with Pearl now for over 3 years, and they just make incredible drums. Proud Zildjian cymbal endorser. I use ProMark sticks with my signature series 5BX. Remo drum heads, DW pedals, Gator cases, and LP percussion.
Nice. And you're such an incredible drummer with such great feel and technique. Who outside of metal and outside of hard rock, who are some of your favorite drummers outside of the metal genre?
There's just too many to list. You know, Neil Peart is my favorite drummer in the world, and he always will be. But, you know, my influences go up and down. But if we're going to talk about non-metal drummers.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Smith, Dave Weckl, Gavin Harrison, Terry Bozzio, Billy Cobham, you know, just all the greats. You know, Steve Smith is my favorite modern day drummer. Cool. Neil's my favorite drummer, period. But Steve is my favorite drummer. As far as the guy who still just like blows me away every time I see him, and he's getting older and older, and he gets wiser and wiser, and he's such an amazing player, and he's always trying to get better, and that's the thing that I think is so cool,
right?
Is that he at his level. Okay, at the level he's at, which is, you know, top professional, Journey, every other thing that he does, he's still trying to get better every single time.
Wow.
And I think that's just an amazing feat right there, because someone who's that good could literally just sit back and be like, yeah, I'm that good. I don't need to practice anymore. but he's still just constantly like, how can I get better? How can I get better? How can I do that? You know, and I just think that's just an amazing thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you spend a lot of time practicing, like when you're not on tour?
Yeah, I spend as much time as I can. That's for sure. You know, I'm good for, if I'm home and I'm off tour, I play at least 5 to 6 days a week.
Very cool. And I was reading on your Wikipedia page that you once jammed an acoustic set with George Lynch, which I found interesting because, you know, you're known for Shadows Fall, Flotsam and Jetsam, doing work with Anthrax. Are you into the commercial hard rock stuff like George Lynch?
Wait, can you say that? You cut out. I didn't hear what you said. An acoustic set with who?
With George Lynch. I was reading on
your... Yeah, that was... What that was is that was a NAMM party. That was a NAMM party that Stu Hamm asked me if I wanted to do. Stu Hamm and I were just did a clinic tour together that year, and he called me up and he says, "Hey, I got to do this Washburn party at NAMM with this guitar player George Lynch. Would you want to play drums?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "I don't know who this guy is." I go, "George Lynch was one of the most amazing guitar players in the '80s from Doc."
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, we did some stuff together. It was fun.
Are you a big fan of the commercial kind of hard rock and metal stuff from the 80s?
Some of it, yeah. Cool. Doc and I loved, Rat I loved, you know, but there's a lot of those bands too that I didn't really care for.
Right. Cool. And Jason, before...
We won't mention any names.
No need to mention names, definitely. And before I let you go, I saw you had tweeted about a drummer named Gus Rios and his need for eye surgery. And I'm going to link his GoFundMe page through the show notes on talkingmetal.com. But could you talk a little bit about Gus and
yeah,
his needs?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, Gus is a really good friend of mine. He's another one of my Florida drum brothers. I live in New York, but we also have a place in Florida, and we have a bunch of us drummers that hang out together down there when we're all down there. Me, Derek Roddy, Gus, Patrick Johansson, who played in Yngwie's band, and Nico McBrain. You might know that guy. He played
sure.
in Iron Maiden. So we all kind of hang out together when we're in Florida, and Gus is having some health problems. He's got glaucoma and needs to have an eye surgery. So, you know, some of us have been trying to help push his GoFundMe campaign so he can afford to have that surgery done so he can afford to keep playing. You know, Gus is the drummer of Malevolent Creation for years and plays in a band called Gruesome right now. And we're just trying to, you know, come together as a community to help him out.
Absolutely. Hopefully the Talking Metal listeners can check out the GoFundMe page for Gus. It'll be linked through today's show notes on talkingmetal.com. Jason, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for this great new Flotsam and Jetsam record, the self-titled record.
No problem. Thank you for the interview.
That song right there, Creeper, that's brand new, Flotsam and Jetsam. Not brand new, the album's been out a little bit, but, you know, came out this year. Good record, really good record. Self-titled Flotsam and Jetsam record. And Victor, of course, one of the big news stories from last week in the heavy metal hard rock world was the new Metallica. Have you had a chance to listen to it?
Yes, I've listened to it quite a bit, actually.
You digging it, or what do you think?
I enjoy the album. I think there are five really, really strong tracks on there. The first three singles, definitely. The third track I really like, Now That We're Dead, which has an homage to sort of Black Sabbath's War Pigs to me, like with what Lars is playing in the beginning.
Yeah, dude, that's what I have in my show notes here. Now That We're Dead is my favorite song off the record. So
mine too. Here is my issue, partly because everyone is saying, oh, this is the best album since whatever. And I'm thinking, did you not listen to Death Magnetic?
Right.
I think Death Magnetic is a much stronger album. It is a lot more varied with the music, actually. And I mean, it's sort of shocking to find out little by little that Kirk had no say whatsoever on the album. I mean, I wonder if that goes back to him losing, his iPhone with all of the riffs he had written. And and B, apparently Robert Trujillo in an interview with, I'm not sure if it's Rolling Stone or with who, pretty much said that this is a Lars album, that Lars sort of spearheaded everything, and it's basically his baby. So that doesn't surprise me, because a lot of the songs really have the same sort of feel to them, as in, you know, if people haven't listened to the album, to me, it feels like a mix of, you know, Devil Dance off of Reload and almost like a Sad But True type thing. Everything is very mid-tempo, except for the three first singles and Spit Out the Bone, or however it's called, which is the last track. And it was funny because a lot of people were saying, wow, this is so cool. If these, you know, if this is how the album is actually lining up, you know, it's going to be great. And my interpretation was, well, yeah, they're there, but between Atlas Rise and the last track, there's eight songs that sound a hell of a lot the same. They're not bad. I mean, I'm not.
Somebody said on Facebook, I don't know if it was Chris from Decibel Geek, or somebody said it would make a really good EP, and I definitely agree with that. You know,
Chris,
to me,
said that.
Like, the Day That Never Comes off of Death Magnetic. To me, I want to hear a Metallica record in that vein, the whole album, like start to finish. You know, Death Magnetic had songs that sounded like vintage or your classic era Metallica, but it also had some songs that sounded more like something from the Load era. You know, I don't know. I just feel like the verdict's still out on this new record for me, but I have seen people just freaking going crazy about it on Facebook and seen some reviews and stuff. And I'm not there yet. I think it's a good record. I'm totally excited. I want to go see Metallica as many times as I possibly can on this next tour. I love seeing them live. They're so much fun. But as far as this, like, being the greatest record since, you know, the Black Album or something, I'm not there yet.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, yeah. Personally, I would put Death Magnetic and Load over this.
Okay.
Again, it's got five tremendous tracks off of it. It's got a bunch of other tracks that are good tracks. And had this have come out the year after Death Magnetic, I would have been like, all right, this is a really cool album. But it's been 8 years. You know, that's something else that sort of factors into all of this, where, you know, had Kiss have put this out, let's say if they put out something that was subpar to Monster, let's say, how many people would have absolutely just crapped over this and said, oh, it's just a watered-down version of this? But for some reason, this is getting, you know, as you're saying, there are all these rave reviews about it. I know some people have said, well, finally, it's got decent production. Right, but if Saint Anger had decent production on it, would that make some of the songs off of that a lot better? Would it make you all of a sudden say, well, it's the best album since the Black album? I think there has to be like some type of a, you know, meeting halfway. The material has to be good. The sound has to be good. I get it that a lot of people don't like the saturated sound of Death Magnetic, but I mean, I want more variation. And again, well, Chinese Democracy is a perfect example of taking so long to come out, and then people say, well, it's not this, it's not that, but this somehow with a lot of people it's received a pass. It's not a crap album. It's definitely not, you know, for my estimate, and I know that you enjoyed Lulu to an extent, but
It's not something, it's not my go-to record. I every now and again will listen to it, and it's just so bizarre that I admire the artsiness of it, but yeah, I couldn't hum one melody off the record for you right this minute, you know? Yeah.
Right. But I mean, I guess in the overall scheme of things, I mean, when you're putting a Metallica playlist, I think in the end you're gonna, you know, listen to those five tracks that really stand out. That'll go in your playlist, and you'll probably eventually forget about the other ones until you revisit the album. I mean, it's definitely, as you're saying, it's not Ride the Lightning. It's not the Black album, and you know, it's good. It's not shit, but I wanted a little more. Let me put it to you that way.
Right on, Victor. Where's the best place for people to connect with you online? Is it Twitter? Is it Facebook?
Facebook is probably the best. I mean, if they just want to hit up my Twitter and Facebook. If you go to VMR907, you can contact with me directly. If you want to comment on any of the shows, I mean, the best place to go to is MarsAttacksRadio.com, and there's links to the social media sites. The same thing for Galaxy of Geeks. That's galaxyofgeeks.net. And also, if you want to check out my other site, which is earpeeler.com, which is basically a podcasting hub per se, which where you can search out bands, genres, and find out all types of interviews that aren't featured on some of your other big name sites. It's a supplement to your usual news browsing experience, is what I would say.
Absolutely. And we will definitely have all that stuff linked through today's show notes on talkingmetal.com, as well as the hotline number if you want to call in like our listeners did today. Special thanks to Joey, David, JB, and Jerry for calling in. Appreciate that. I want to hear from you guys. The hotline number is listed in the show notes, again, on talkingmetal.com. You can use our Amazon links through talkingmetal.com. You guys know how that works. There's a PayPal donation tab. There is my Snapchat info, my Twitter info, my Facebook info, my Instagram info. It's all up there in the show notes for today's episode. And a big special thanks to Dustin for lining up the interview with Jason today from Flotsam and Jetsam. Special thanks to Victor. Great talking with you, Victor.
Absolutely. It's always a lot of fun to catch up with you and come on the show.
Yeah, we'll do it again soon. This is Now That We're Dead, a little sound sample of Metallica to take us out. Of course, go buy the full version of this song on iTunes or listen to it on Spotify or, you know, in some place where it's illegal for you to listen to the whole thing. And again, you guys are the greatest. I really appreciate you sticking with me through all the different variations of Talking Metal, and it's good to talk through some of that today with you, Victor, and with you listeners. So here we go. New Metallica here on Talking Metal. We'll talk to you next time.
3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.